It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode 3.2.
Planting genetically modified carnivore seeds in your inner ear to consume your delicious mind.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
And this episode is actually semi-double episode because we didn't have one last week. Kind of mostly because Jen just sucks.
That totally was not my fault.
Yeah, no, it totally was. It wasn't because I sort of forgot to tell her that I was leaving on Thursday afternoon. Yeah. It wasn't because of that.
It totally wasn't because of that. And it wasn't because I had conferences all weekend long and couldn't do it on his supposed makeup day. No.
No, no, no. It wasn't because of that at all. No.
I know it wasn't because it was all your fault, not mine.
Yeah, but it's okay because nobody missed us anyway.
Exactly.
So, first things first, we're going to go over the movies that are coming out this month, or technically already did, since some of them already did come out, and give you our scores and tell you basically why we're not going to see most of these.
Yeah.
So, let's start right off the bat. The first one, of course, is Hop, which I just saw the commercials for recently and decided that I may kill myself, because if we have come to this point that we're even making the Easter Bunny into the Santa Claus movies, it's over.
Yes, I'm pretty sure it was over before that, but Hop looks truly atrocious, and I would rather kill myself as well.
It's so dumb.
I actually like the actors, both of the actors in it. It's James Marsden.
And the girl from The Big Bang
Theory.
They made her look like she's she's been tanning her whole life. She's an unusual shade of orange.
Well, she's always been kind of an unusual shade of orange. But anyway, so unfortunately, just because of the premise, it's stupid. Easter Bunny doesn't want to be the Easter Bunny and wants to be a rock band. Dumb. Not worth watching.
I didn't even know that much. The commercials I've seen aren't that bad.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, my score is a 1. I'd rather kill myself.
Yep, me too.
And I'm sure somebody's going to make us watch that. So the next up is Insidious, which is billing itself to be kind of like Paranormal Activity.
Well, only because I think
The Exorcism.
It was made by the people that did Paranormal Activity.
Right.
And this is starring Rose Byrne, who I love, but it also has been getting reviews like it will make you crap yourself. So
yeah,
I'm going to have to give this a 1 because I would rather kill myself than watch a movie that makes me want to crap myself because it's that scary.
I think it's actually going to suck really bad, so I'm giving it a 2 because I think it's all of the scary bits are in it, and that it's actually just dumb.
I've heard it's scarier than the first Paranormal.
I know, but you know what? Some people say like the new Scream movie's scary, and that's just, whatever.
Yeah,
I don't trust.
I would definitely rather kill myself to watch that. So whatever.
But the basic premise is this: the boy falls and he goes into a coma, but he's not really in a coma. They find out he's possessed, and like weird crap happens in the house. And by weird crap, I mean like crazy things like. The house falls down or whatever.
Standard Paranormal Activity exorcisms type movie.
Yeah.
That supposedly makes you crack yourself. So let's go from there.
All right, next one, which is already out, I believe, is Source Code.
All three of these are already out.
Oh, okay. So these were on what, April 1st or something?
April 1st movies, yes.
Okay.
So yeah, Source Code, Jake Gyllenhaal.
I know. It's Jake Gyllenhaal.
And Michelle Monaghan in our first pure science fiction.
Yeah.
A guy in the army who can a program that can apparently download you into a body of a person that's already dead.
Is that the premise? The trailers I've seen have made it seem like they're putting him there, but making him relive the same moment until he can find the bomb.
Yeah, the last 8 minutes.
It's
to relive the last 8 minutes to find the bomb, but only so that they can prevent a future attack. Because if he finds the bomb And therefore they figure out what type of bomb it is. And, I think this is the premise that basically they need to find the bomb so that they can find who set the bomb. And so they make him replay it over and over again, but he gets the idea, I believe, that he can actually change this last 8 minutes.
Right. Cause he falls for a girl on the train. It's, you know, actiony, romancy. Yeah. It looks really cool though. And it's Jake Gyllenhaal. So anything he's in, I pretty much want to see.
Yeah, I'm giving it a 4. I'd like to see it.
Yeah, I'm giving it a 4, too. I'd like to see it. Yeah, definitely.
I'd say a 5. I'll be there opening night in costume, but it's already
there are
come
no
out,
costumes. Like, what are you going to dress up like?
Right, exactly.
You dress up as the guy from Prince of Persia. You know, huh?
All right, so April 8th, which is 2 days before the release of this episode, we have Your Highness, which
yes.
is a stoner fantasy medieval fantasy movie.
With Natalie Portman and James Franco and that weird guy from Tropic
Thunder.
Danny
McBride, Zoe Deschanel. It's a pretty hilarious cast. Mostly
yeah.
because of Natalie Portman and a bunch of stoners.
I am giving it a 4?
I am giving it a 4 as well. I would like to see this movie.
Even though I know it'll probably be really bad.
Well, it's the Pineapple Express guys.
And I know, but it's also Natalie freaking Portman.
Is pretty hilarious, so there's hope for Your Highness.
Pineapple Express was it was okay.
Well, it's you have to be stoned to really enjoy it.
I guess.
All right, so that's pretty much the only thing we have coming out, fantasy or science fiction related, on April 8th. So that brings us to April 15th.
Which is Rio.
Yeah.
Which is about birds, a bird special.
Rare parrot that can't fly.
That can't fly, and he gets stuck in Rio or something and falls in love with another rare bird.
They sent him there to mate with another bird.
And clearly she doesn't want to get it on with him because he sucks, so.
He can't fly, yeah.
Well, it's basically a giant sex metaphor. It's basically for he's gay. That's it. And this is a story about him becoming un-gay.
That's why it's in Rio.
I guess. Man, I'm going to write a paper on this now. That's what the metaphor is. If you think about it, it makes total sense.
That gay men can't fly?
No, that the flying is the metaphor for his
or
gayness.
Being, because
he can't have, because they sent him
can't
there to get
have
to mate,
normal
right?
relations.
He can't have normal relations,
quote,
right, with
unquote,
a woman.
Normal relations.
Yes, I know.
Right?
So this is his cure. He has to have this whole adventure in order for him to be cured of his gayness.
Right.
In this case, his non-flyingness.
His non-flyingness.
So then he can get his birdie freak on.
Yeah.
It
okay.
is. It works. Shut up. It's a hidden meaning, and you know it.
So I'm giving this a 3.
Yeah, me too.
Because I might have to watch it with my kids.
I mean, the animation looks okay, and it might actually be a good story. I mean, but
as long as it's not actually about what you think it's about,
it may be better than that. I'll watch it. But anyway, moving on.
All right, April 22nd. I'm excited about this one.
Oh wait, is this Apollo?
Apollo 18.
Oh, okay.
Apollo 18. This one is a cross between, as I just said, Moon, Blair Witch Project, or Paranormal Activity, and any random alien movie.
It's kind of like Pitch Black meets Moon and Blair Witch Project.
Yes.
Because they go to the moon, and the idea is it's this secret mission, nobody knows anything about it, and so it's all sort of documentary style and everything, and there's something on the moon.
Right.
And that's why we haven't gone back.
Exactly. So it actually takes place in when did Apollo 18 supposedly go? The 70s, somewhere
70s,
around there?
70s, yeah, I think.
So, I mean, in that sense, it's the documentary sort of portrayal. And this is supposedly the archive footage that was shot and made it back to Earth, but nobody ever talked about the mission because of what they found on the moon.
Which is why they've never gone back.
Yeah.
It may be really dumb. But I'm giving it a 3 because I do kind of want to see it, but not...
I'm giving it a 4. I'd really like to see this one.
It's going to be a scary movie, though.
No, this isn't going to be a scary movie.
Yeah, it's going to be scary.
Because it doesn't have dead things.
Yes, it does. There's a picture of a dead body in this.
No. Okay, it doesn't have dead things coming back to life.
Okay, whatever,
that's,
fine.
That's, to me, what constitutes a scary movie.
I think he gets possessed by it, but it's okay. Okay.
I'm okay with science scary.
Okay. Fine. Well, we'll move on then, Mrs. Okay. Confusing.
I know.
All right. Okay. So the next one coming out is a movie that I would never.
I'm giving it. It's probably torture cinema.
Yeah, it really is probably torture cinema. Although I'm realizing that both 1 and 2 are both torture cinema material, but only one of them is the type of movie that you literally go into a coma. I think Hoodwinked is the kind of movie that'll be almost a coma territory, but still within number 2 for torture cinema. Because the problem with this movie is it's got such a cute premise.
Well, we haven't even said what the movie is.
Oh, yes. Hoodwinked 2. Not T-W-O. T-O-O.
Hood versus Evil.
Yes.
Ha, ha,
and the basic idea is it's Red Riding Hood, and there's like a secret organization that makes sure that all fairy tales have a happy ending. And that, I mean, that it's kind of dumb, but at the same time, it's really cool.
Right.
It's kind of just sort of.
I honestly haven't seen the first one, so who knows? But I think there's a reason I haven't seen the first one. Actually, I believe the first one got decent reviews, but.
But the animation is so awful.
I don't like the animation at all. I don't like the style of art.
It's awful. The mouths don't match up.
Yeah.
It's not clean. It's all fuzzy. It's just awful looking. It really looks like cheap crap from the 90s.
Yeah. So I'm giving it a 2.
Yeah.
But it could be a 3.
No.
In the end, it could end up being a 3.
No, not with that animation. Unless that's just early footage. Yeah. But anyway.
All right, and then our last film that supposedly is coming out this month, I believe it's probably on a limited release, and it might not be coming out in the United States, but we had to put it on here because it's kind of hilarious. So,
thinking about that, it makes me change my score.
This last film is The Troll Hunter. It is a Norwegian film.
Yeah.
That is done in the style of a documentary a la Blair Witch Project or anything made by Michael Moore. There's actually a Michael Moore reference.
Yeah, I know.
This is about a group of troll hunters, documentarians who have decided that trolls actually exist, and there's a government conspiracy to make sure the public doesn't find out.
Yeah.
So they go out hunting trolls to find proof that trolls actually do exist.
And
And one of the best parts of the trailer, you have to go watch it, it totally cracks me up, is that apparently
the troll can sniff Christians.
Right. Only people who are really safe are probably atheist women.
I know, because there's a whole line about one of the people in the group is Muslim, and he asks, are Muslim okay? And he's like, I don't know.
I don't know.
Because they don't have Muslims there. That is so hilarious. Like, he can sniff you out.
Yeah.
I'm Christian. When they're running and he's confessing he's a Christian.
Yeah. It looks kind of cute. So I'm giving this a 4. I would like to see this.
I'm giving it a 3 because I need to see more to find out if it's meant to be more jokey or if it's trying to be serious. If it's trying to be serious, it's going to a 2.
Okay, I'm going to give you one hint that it's not trying to be serious. Did you see at the end of the trailer how they beat the trolls?
With sunlight.
With giant UV lights.
Yeah, I know. But that makes sense because trolls turn to stone in sunlight.
Let's be logical here. If there's... I mean, what biological process?
They're trolls, Jen. Trolls.
The whole conversation about, they sniff out Christian, they can sniff out the blood of Christian men. That should be hint enough that it's a total joke movie. That they're going so straight off of the legends that the people actually believe that it's true.
Yeah, but some of the people that live in those areas, like, really do believe this, the stuff.
This is a joke movie, and
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah. I'm giving it a 4. It looks hilarious.
Well, that's it. That's all of our movies, so...
Go watch them.
What?
Or don't go watch them.
Yeah, go watch the ones you want to watch. I mean, you don't have to watch any of them if you don't want. But anyway, yeah, so there aren't as many as last month, but, there's a good supply of stuff to watch. So
it's a good mix this month. We actually have fantasy and science fiction coming out. So
yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah. So all right, so we're going to go into news, and then we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with a very brief discussion about another topic. So first thing in the news actually is, well, hopefully good news, but we'll see, that Alcon Entertainment is basically just purchased or is at the final moments in purchasing the rights to Blade Runner from Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
And understanding is that they basically are purchasing every single right except the right to remake the 1982 film.
Which is the part of this news that I find the most hopeful, because I would be really pissed if they remade the original, which granted is actually kind of a boring movie, but it's stunning and fascinating.
Yeah.
It's just kind of long-winded. So, but I don't think it should be remade ever. I don't want it touched, you know? So I'm glad that they're going with a prequel, sequel, and possible TV, you know, deal. Because I think that people could do something with that, a la, you know, going with Tron. You know, obviously they didn't decide to remake Tron, but they did a pretty darn good sequel to it.
Mm-hmm. So, and they're making more.
And they're making more. Whereas with Star Wars, or Star Trek, they decided to
remake
it. Blah. Kind of.
They just basically changed everything. They did a time alternate history.
It would be really interesting if someone tried to do a Blade Runner. You know, like, what? That doesn't even make sense. But yeah, so it's cool. I'm stoked. Let's hope that something good comes out of it.
Yeah, we'll see. But well, you know, maybe we'll get some stuff. But we'll see. We'll see. I mean, Hollywood is lame, so they have a tendency to be dumb.
Exactly.
So,
all right. So, moving off of movie news entirely, and I don't think we're going to have any more for the rest of the day. We have a report that a university in Australia, University of New South Wales.
I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's New South Wales. It's not North South Wales.
New South Wales. Okay, got it.
Yeah. They are throwing away thousands of their books and scholarly journals and turning the library into a Starbucks. Ha ha. That's the joke.
Basically.
Anyway.
Yeah.
They're clearing the space so that they can have cafe style lounges, because they've discovered that students don't like books anymore. They like to research online.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And you know why that is? Because researching online is really easy to find shit that's not true.
Exactly. I could see this being a great thing if all of the books that they're throwing down in the basement, they were putting online or in some sort of database, but I don't think that's happening.
No, it doesn't seem to be so. It says they're just chucking stuff. It doesn't say that they're making all of the materials they have. But it also doesn't say which materials they're getting rid of.
No, but...
So, because it says that they're concerned that a lot of stuff, a lot of the research materials are now appearing online, and if they're being smart and they're removing the books in their collection that are already online, there'd be at least a semi-logic to it, but I don't know if that's the case.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's apparently a 138-page list of stuff that they're dropping.
Thousands of titles until 50,000. Recently...
No, remove well, each year, 50,000 each year.
Each year, 50,000, which is crazy. I mean, that's a crazy number of books. I mean, that's not necessarily titles, that's volumes, so that's copies.
Right. But their rule does not allow the last Australian copy of any book to be discarded.
Yeah.
Which is a very nationalistic rule. Jerks. Go to hell. Damn.
I don't know. I think it's a travesty. I really hope it doesn't happen everywhere. It basically makes libraries meaningless.
Well, of course it does. I mean, it doesn't become a library. It's just a computer lab.
Right. Exactly.
People don't go to the library. You go to the library for a good reason. I think it's just an Australian education problem, because that wouldn't happen here. Like here, I see people with their books out all the time at University of Florida. They got books open all the time.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. I mean, and that's what happens at Santa Cruz as well, so I don't know.
Because it's a good resource, because a lot of the books that they have are not books that you're going to find anywhere else.
Right, because they haven't, they haven't digitized all these titles, and they're not going to. It's not going to happen.
Right, because it would cost too much money and time to digitize half the books they have.
Exactly, and
who's going to spend
the legal battle would be atrocious, and, you know, it's...
Right, I mean, academic texts particularly, since you know, they're part of the presses themselves are part of universities, which are like want a stranglehold on their materials. So
exactly. So no, I think it's a horrible, horrible idea. I'm not sure what genius thought it up, but who knows?
Yeah, some ass monkey.
I'm gonna go steal all the books that they have sitting in their basement, though.
Are they just chucking them away, or can like people save?
Some of them are getting thrown away.
I mean, I guess like for the encyclopedias and dictionaries, I can understand throwing those away, because if you've got 12 English dictionaries, like you don't really need all of those. But if you're just throwing
Yeah, but at the same time, people probably actually do research on even dictionaries. I mean, that's kind of the thing, is that different volumes are going to have different variations that could be part of a research project.
So if you're throwing them away. Yeah. Oh, it says here, thousands of books have been dumped and skipped in the library basement, and staff in various disciplines say they have not been given the opportunity to salvage them. So they're not even giving people the opportunity to save the books they're chucking. They're just chucking them.
It sounds like, though, that some people are staging, what would you call it, liberation projects for the books. They have a mention of library staff have rescued books destined for
destined to be in the bin. Well, it seems that's to me is the evil part. Like, okay, fine. You want to get rid of the library? That sucks. That's awful. And I'm going to think you're an evil person for that. But that you're throwing out books without asking whether anybody wants these books. You're just getting rid of them. And it's like, well, this is literary culture. You can't just chuck it. Somebody might want those books.
Right, exactly. It makes sense for the things, the academic journals. Those are usually things that could be easily digitized and are shorter and, you know.
Sure.
They come out much more often than.
But they're not digitizing those things. Either.
Right. So, well, no. I mean, that's what they're saying, is that they are doing some online archiving of journals.
Yeah, some journals are archived online now through the databases.
But I mean, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I agree with the policy if everything is online and accessible to everybody.
No, I don't agree with the policy in general.
But
it's a library. Well, libraries must have books in them. Period.
Right.
Done.
That's kind of my thing too. Is that it's a library. Libraries are for hardbound books.
It's a library at a school.
Digital library.
What do you do when you go to school?
I don't know. Let's move on.
Learn? You're supposed to be there to learn.
Yeah, I know you do.
What do you do in libraries? You learn stuff.
That's true.
Yeah. Maybe if we didn't denigrate libraries all the time and like say, hey, we can cut money from libraries, and we actually said, you know, that, I don't know, libraries do good work in this country, maybe people would care.
Maybe.
Or maybe if we spent more time in public school teaching kids, you know, how to actually research at the library and what kind of interesting, nifty stuff they could find at the library, and teaching the skills, maybe they would use the library.
That would require...
it would require a librarian.
Librarians.
Oh.
And that would require money, and we don't like giving money to anything that has to do with education.
That's right.
Right, yeah. But that's in this country, so that doesn't explain Australia. So, I don't know.
Yeah, they're the same.
Enough ranting about libraries.
All right, well, let's go with something slightly humorous.
We're going with silly topics. Our next three topics are silly topics.
Yeah, they're kind of silly. So archaeologists have apparently, well, they claim that they've discovered Atlantis in southern Spain.
Yes, this is slightly old news, and so I'm sure most everybody has heard of it, but I still have to laugh about it 3 weeks later because it's hilarious. I mean, this is one of those, it's never going to die. I when I first read it, I was like, wow, that's kind of spiffy. Only because the idea of a city being in the location, not that it was Atlantis. That's, I think, the what the hell is wrong with you people? Why would you even do that part? That, like, automatically means that nobody's going to take you seriously. However, if they had just said, we've discovered a city that was probably flooded in tsunamis, that would be interesting to me. But to get the mass public attention, they have to say, oh, it's Atlantis.
Yeah, and their logic being that they found memorials constructed in central Spain by coastal refugees from a city, which is the city. This is the city that they're talking about, that this was flooded.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually in a marsh area. of Spain that they think they've discovered it. It's this really marshy land. So
I guess I want to know why they think it's Atlantis and not just some city that was flooded.
Because supposedly it is in rings.
So?
And Plato said that Atlantis was constructed in rings.
Oh, did he really?
Yes. So for some reason people go, oh, see, this guy who wrote about Atlantis thousands of years after Atlantis supposedly existed said that it had rings, so therefore it must have rings, and we should find cities that have rings, because that would be Atlantis, whether or not it's true.
Oh, this is silly.
Exactly.
I mean, cool,
Plato
fine, they found a city, but...
yeah. At least. You know, who knows? Maybe in the Library of Alexandria there were more references, but we'll never know because it burned to the ground, so whatever.
It's
not Atlantis. We can laugh at them and go, wow, that's a really crappy ploy to get media attention.
Yeah. But it works because we're talking about
it. It works because we're talking about it.
All right. So the next silly bit of news is something that enough people have actually talked about already, which is a news story about a letter that BioWare sent to a player of their new game, Dragon Age 2. Apparently the player was very upset because the game has gay relationships in it.
Well, what's hilarious is that the quote from the letter he sent was that they are neglecting their main demographic, the straight male gamer, because straight male gamers are notoriously homophobic, and therefore, if you have any gayness in it, then they're not going to play anymore. I'm going, really? That's your argument? Straight male gamers are all homophobic? That's really...
But it's so funny because he's arguing that it's not catering to him, and my thought is, well, but it is. Your character doesn't have to be gay.
Right.
It doesn't. You can choose not to be gay in the game. Like... They not understand?
This guy is so sexist, it's hilarious, too. So, he has a comment about, there are a substantial amount of women who play video games, but they play games like The Sims, not Dragon Age.
I know, which is total crap.
And then you have things like, it's ridiculous that I even have to use a term like straight male gamer, when in the past, I would only have to say fans. This guy is such a douche that it's like, we crown you king of douches. You know, it's classic. But the funny part of this entire story isn't that this guy is a douche. It's actually that the CEO?
David Gator.
I don't know what he is, but yeah, one of the BioWare people came back and said, you're a douche, basically. I just love it. I mean, seriously, it's nice that this company is calling out this guy for being a douche.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean...
I'm sorry. It's like five paragraphs of him going, seriously? What? You're not the only ones who play the game? And yeah, so we're going to have to pay attention to them too.
He goes after him because he says something to the effect of that... you can write it off as political correctness if you wish, but the truth is that privilege always lies with the majority.
Uh-huh.
Right? You know, basically it's like, you know, and I love his ending line is, and the person who says that the only way to please them being the people that are upset that they're letting gay people play the game, or whatever, the only way to please them, the person who says that the only way to please them is to restrict options for others is, if you ask me, the one who deserves it least.
Exactly.
It's great.
Exactly. No, it's genius, and I hope this guy actually does win Douche of the Year award. Internet Douche of the Year. Do they have that?
They do now. I mean, if this guy was actually a writer, the guy who bitched and complained, I would put him on my Wisp Awards as Worst Person of the Year, but...
Yeah. Oh, classic. So, remember, people, you're not the only one that plays the game.
Right, and it's not like they forced you to be gay.
No.
It's so, I mean,
it goes back to the whole argument against, you know, marriage equality. Well, most people who get married are straight. Well, yeah, because you're not allowed to get married if... You're not straight.
Exactly.
What does that have to do with you? I mean, yeah.
Oh, it's so dumb.
Hilarity ensues. Props to Dragon Age first for making it possible to have gay relationships in the game. And props to them even more, to the parent company BioWare, for standing up for diversity in video gaming.
It's awesome. I wonder if this guy ever responded.
I don't know, but
it's so pathetic.
I doubt it, only because he just sounds like more of a douche.
Oh, there.
No, wait. There's a link.
I know. There's a link. I just looked.
There's more to it, people. There's more.
Oh my gosh! There's a whole freaking letter by this guy. I'm not gonna read it all. Oh, we'll have to read this later and have a fest about it later. I didn't even realize that this was a whole big thing. Okay, well, we'll look at that again later.
Yes, sure. We will. This is going to be a fun topic. Diversity in video gaming.
Oh, just diversity.
Brought to you by the offended straight male gamer.
Yeah.
I hope this continues past even this. I really do. I mean, I think it's a topic that needs to be addressed.
Oh, sure, for sure.
You know? Yeah. So, yeah. All right, so our next bit of news, it shouldn't be funny, but it's funny to me because I am a Paolini hater.
Loser.
Basically.
Go to hell.
What? You like him?
Yeah, his book's all right.
They're juvenile. I mean, they're good for, I guess, something. Just paperweight. I'm kidding.
Not that bad.
Terrible.
You're talking about him like...
No, I'm not even talking about the movie, though. Aragorn the movie was terrible, but then I went and read Aragorn and Eldest. I read both of them. I still have not read Bissinger because I was really disappointed by Aragorn and Eldest. When I came away from it, I suppose if I had been 16 years old reading the books, I might have been impressed by them. So props to him for that. However, as a between 20... I don't know how long ago the first book came out, but however, the past 10 years, I just have not been impressed with it enough to want to keep reading. And anyway, the news is that his newest last book,
it's coming out this year, November 8th,
out this year. So yay, finally it will end. He's been taking a long time to write these books, you know,
a long time. I stopped reading when he told me that his last book was going to be split in two.
And the last book, the two parts are Brisinger and Inheritance, correct?
Yeah, and I stopped reading when he split it. I was like, I'm not gonna get into Brisinger and have to wait a year and a half for Inheritance. I just,
blah. Yeah, that seems.
But anyway,
even though, especially since we'd already waited long enough between Eldest and Brisinger, what was the time span between those? Like 2 to 3 years or something.
Yeah.
It was a long time.
And it was a while.
I honestly don't see Paolini going anywhere past these books.
Oh, no, I do.
I really
They're
don't.
Expecting a first printing for Inheritance of 2.5 million books.
That's great. And yeah, then they'll be done with him.
No, I doubt it. They'll want more from him because people will buy his books.
Yeah, I suppose.
They will. Just look at it. Stephanie Meyer. She wrote The Host.
But other people are writing these last books for him anyway.
What?
Sorry. I told you I was a Paolini hater.
Oh, God of hell. Anyway, okay, so last bit of news before we go briefly into our discussion.
Oh, yeah.
Is there's been a new ebook place come out called Anarchy Books. I've been mostly hearing about it by the lovely Andy Remick, who is publishing him, of course. And they seem to be, you know, sort of like morbid and high octane, like horror, sci-fi, and pretty dark stuff. But it's a new imprint, a new ebook imprint. It contains a lot of interesting stuff. I mean, cool books, and yeah, I mean, it looks pretty damn cool.
We will have to try to grab one of them for a review/interview at some point.
Yeah, there's some cool books coming out. I mean, the recent one, and folks may not know, but I have a quote on a blurb on the front of Andy Remick's book with the Anarchy Books.
Which is super extra brilliantly exciting. Did you get them to change it to your name instead of the
No,
blog?
Because it's not posted. Yeah, I'm sorry. But it's awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah, SQT tried to, she tried to take credit for it, but I told her, no, you can't have that one. That one's mine. It's all mine.
She did?
She, like, half tried to take credit. It was cute, though.
It was like, that sounds kind of diabolical and evil.
No.
Except that it's SQT, and I know she's a very nice person, so she wouldn't do that.
Yeah. But yeah, so, you know,
that's very exciting. Good. And check out Anarchy Books. They've got some cool looking books out there.
They do. They have some really cool looking books.
Totally.
Vivisepulture is their Weird Tales of Twisted Imagination, which is very disturbing.
And the name, Vivisepulture.
I know. It's got cool stuff. Lauren Bucus is in it. Hey, what do you know? Sold.
Right. Done!
Cool. Alrighty. So that's a bit about it for our news. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to the music real quick and then come back and we're going to do a brief discussion about some interesting stuff to do with gender.
Yay. We love gender.
Alright. We will be right back.
Yep.
All right, we're back. We're going to talk briefly here about two things. The Strange Horizons SF Count by, I'm assuming you say it, Niall Harrison. Or Neil.
Sure.
Niall? Niall?
It's basically just Neil.
Oh. Well, it's a very unusual spelling, so I'm not sure how you say it. Of Strange Horizons, he or she, is it? I don't know. He? Okay.
It's the Gaelic version of Neil, N-E-A-L. It's totally not that weird.
It is for me. Shush. Give me a break. Okay, anyway, point is, did all the statistics of all the books reviewed and all of the reviewers for basically all the major SFF sources for reviews and check the genders of what books were received or reviewed by these certain publications, who did the reviewing, etc., and came up with some very, very interesting things for the major sources. They did, for example, with Locus. Locus has, when it comes to U.S. books, receives roughly even in terms of gender. But when it comes to reviewing, the reviews are not actually all that even, as we find out. For example, with Locus, again, going with Locus, the stuff reviewed, 61% are books by men that are reviewed, and 56% of the people that do the reviewing are men with Locus.
They're actually the closest.
True.
Out of all the companies that do reviews, they are the closest to a sort of gender balance. Not an actual gender balance, but they're the closest to the actual number of books published, because what we're going off of is a baseline of, well, the fact that there is still a gender balance between the number of women who get books published and the number of men. It's less in the United States than it is the United Kingdom. In the United States, it's 45% of books published are by women and 53% are by men, whereas in the UK, it's only 37% by women and 63% by men. So Locus is closest to that balance in the United States, you know, which is kind of hopeful. They actually have 43% of their reviewers are women, but they're only reviewing 38%. Only 38% of the reviews are books by women.
Right. And of course, there's more statistics we need. We need to know. Well, I mean, with Locus, we have pretty much all of the information in terms of what was received. And in the case of Locus, it was close to even for what they received. 45% of books by women, 53% by men. So, I mean, the fact that the number of books they reviewed were, I mean, that's not that big. I don't see that as a big a disparity in terms of the gender and what's reviewed. But right. A lot of the other sources we don't have, like Asimov's has basically the all of their reviewers are men. And they review 67% of everything they review are books by men. And, of course, then you get with Foundation, which is an academic test. 80% of the stuff that's reviewed is by men. 79% of the reviewers are men. Interzone, 81.8% of the reviewers are men. 86.8% of the books reviewed are by men. And then the New York Review of Books, also in the 80s for reviewers, and 74.5% of books reviewed are by men. The SF site, roughly the same numbers in the 70s. SFX, which is a UK source, I believe, in the 80s.
Almost identical for each, though. Well, not one, which is interesting.
That's true. Which
80% reviewers and 80% men published books.
Sent to them that they reviewed. Yeah. Right, which is interesting. I mean, that's something to... Yeah. I mean, I guess depending on what you send matters. And, of course, Strange Horizons, which is really nice of them, to be honest. Their numbers are actually not that bad. I mean, 61% of the books reviewed were by men, and about 64% of their reviewers are men.
Are men, yeah.
Yeah. So, and there are other sites like Vector, which is in the 70s again. It's very interesting. Although the numbers, I think, are very fascinating.
There's only one magazine that has a higher proportion of female reviewers. And
right,
that's
Fantasy
the magazine of fantasy and science fiction. Right. And what's interesting about that, though, is they're still, even though 60% of the reviewers are women, they're only reviewing 30% of books by women.
Of the set they receive, 30% that it gets reviewed is, or 30% of all of the reviews they do are by women. Yeah.
Are by women, exactly.
It's right.
The women authors, yes. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty big gender imbalance. So, I mean, and what you can take from that is that I'm not sure if their baseline statistics are all, that's all books. That's not science fiction and fantasy necessarily.
Oh, sure, sure.
So the disparity in science fiction and fantasy might actually be a lot higher and could be closer to the numbers that you're seeing in the reviewing, in that, yes, in the United States, 45% of the books published are by women, but is that the number when you consider science fiction and fantasy books? Who knows? Plus,
yeah.
The demographics that their baseline is based on all books, not new books. So it actually includes reprints of, like, you know, Dracula, for instance.
Oh, sure,
so,
sure.
I think that's something that one would have to look at closer. Is it possible that there actually are more science fiction or fantasy books by women? I don't think there are, but let's say that there are a lot of books being written by women that, first, A, are not getting published by the publishing companies.
Mm-hmm.
And then B, even when they are getting published, are they not being reviewed? And that's where the breakdown, where in order to actually completely see a disparity, which I think we'll find, and I think it'll be a pretty large disparity, is if we have that further breakdown of these statistics.
Sure. I don't know if we're gonna get all of the information, though. I mean, there's a lot of statistics that are gonna be really hard to get from anybody, so.
Well, right. I mean, for whatever, one, who knows how many books are actually being received. Is that something they track? Probably, but who knows? And it's probably not something that they're going to release in the first place, the publishing companies. Two, the numbers that we have from the magazines and review sites don't include the books. It doesn't say whether these are books that they've received, because they're not reviewing every book that they receive.
No, absolutely not. They don't have time.
Exactly. So the question is this actually reflective of the books that they're receiving?
Yeah, see, that would be an interesting question, because, I mean, what if something like Interzone, which had fairly high male on both sides, well, what if they only received, I don't know, two books by women, and they reviewed both those books by women, and that accounts
right.
for the 13% of books by women they reviewed, or whatever, right?
Right, right.
So, but we don't know that. We don't really know how much all of these. The only place we know is Locus. That's the only one we know what stuff they received.
Do we? How
yeah.
do you know that? Where is that number?
It's the first one. Baseline demographics. U.S. book published. Locus books received.
Yes.
It's the baseline statistics. The very first.
Oh,
pie charts.
Right.
Those are
yeah.
based on Locus books received.
Based on Locus. That's right.
Yeah.
So.
It's the only one we actually have that information about. We don't have that about anybody else. Well, they also didn't run the numbers like for SF Signal, which does a lot of reviews, and they don't have them on here, but they're also not, they're not a paid review site, so, eh. It's interesting.
Right. Yeah, actually, I just realized that they're not even going off of, their baseline isn't even actually the number of,
no,
I've
it's
been
not.
Totally wrong this, it's not the number of books published, it's the number of books that they get,
that
so,
Locus gets, yeah.
Yeah, that Locus gets, so kudos to them, because they're actually one of the closest sites to where they should be. So the question
actually,
then,
they're pretty darn close.
They're pretty darn close
to what they receive.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, the question is, is Asimov's, you know, randomly receiving about 67% or more of their books are written by men? You know,
I don't know.
Same goes for the other ones. Are they, is it closer to that? And who knows? But that is that the fault of the publishing company, or is that the fault of the review companies? Because they could have created an environment where it's pretty obvious that they're not taking books by women.
Oh, sure.
A.
Sure.
And B, obviously in the final publishing of these things, it might prove that their readership is less women and more men. And, you know, companies obviously tend to cater to whatever audience is reading them.
Sure.
But
and of course, you have to think of the fact that some of these, I mean, say, for example, if you take Foundation is an academic journal.
Right.
So the stuff that they're taking and they're publishing are very specific kinds of work. And then you have places like, say, Analog, which is they're a largely hard SF location. So the books they're going to review are going to be very limited anyway. And let's be honest, there aren't a lot of women who write hard SF. There are some, but there aren't many. So it could make sense that something like, say, Analog or something like that would not be that much, you know,
right.
given and reviewed.
Right. I mean, that is a very good point, because there is a disparity for sure in who is writing science fiction and fantasy. So, I mean, these are issues that I think the science fiction and fantasy world has to deal with, or at least not ignore. But the question then becomes, why is there a disparity? Is it the writers? Is it the readers? And
well, with some of these, the thing is that it's really hard to talk about, because all of these magazines have very different editorial processes.
Right.
So, for example, Strange Horizons, as far as I understand, does not have they have an editorial group, like people that do the editing, but that choose the pieces, but that the people that get published are not necessarily, they're not contracted out. They're, at least in my case, when I did a movie review, I had to submit the movie review and then worked with the editor and had that published.
Right.
With places like, I'm pretty sure with Asimov's, since they only have three.
They have them on, they're on staff.
They're on staff. And I imagine that's maybe somewhat true of the others. Like maybe a lot of the magazines have a staff of people and then maybe mm-hmm. they bring in other ones. I mean, it seems like FNSF has a staff as well, because it says they have five reviewers. Three of them are women: Elizabeth Hand, Michelle West, and Chris Moriarty. One of who I've read their book. The last I've read her book. It's really good. And then they have two men. So some of these have staff groups of staff. So it's kind of that's also the big issue, because how mm-hmm. the people are selected into being a part of the editorial or the reviewing group is just too drastic. It's that they're too different. I mean, you know, there's a different disparity that would exist perhaps for, say, Strange Horizons, that takes submissions in the same way you take stories of who they select. The disparity would be a very different kind of disparity than, say, Asimov's or something, which has a staff, which those
which
people already
yeah,
selected.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And I think, I mean, both are things that should be dealt with. Asimov's might want to get at least one woman on their review board, A.
They are run by Sheila Williams, though, is their...
Well, right. So, I mean, at least you have some female input into the process, which is nice.
A lot of female input. She's the editor.
A lot. Right, exactly. But then, you know, like the New York Review of Science Fiction has a pool of reviewers. So it's a number of them. I don't know how many, but I think it's quite a few. And 82% of them are men.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, who's picking who those reviewers are? Is it a dude? Is it a woman? I mean, obviously, there are women out there that are doing reviews. So
yeah, I think with New York Review, because it's not an academic publication, but it is packaged with other, that's not, New York Review of Science Fiction isn't something you're going to see on your shelves anymore.
Right.
And it's mostly stuff that most people in the SFF community are really not going to go to. It's almost like it's not academic because it doesn't do academic work, but it is peddled through the academic field. I know because I'm part of the Science Fiction Research Association, so they try to give us discounts on that particular publication. That might explain also. I mean, let's face it, the academic community, there are a lot of women in English departments and so forth, but there aren't a lot of women in science fiction studies, as far as I can tell. It's a lot of men. There are more women coming into it, but So I don't know.
All right, so let's go to the examination of why is fantasy ascendant over science fiction?
Let's not do that this time.
Let's not do that this time. We don't want to deal with that this time.
We're already going pretty long. I mean, we just talked about that for like 15 minutes.
Did we really?
Yeah, we really talked about the Strange Horizons SF count. So
shocking. All right, fine.
Yeah, let's save it because we can definitely still have that discussion.
Yeah.
So why don't we do that next month?
Okay.
We'll do that.
Putting it on the list.
That'll be one of our topics. That'll be one of our topics for our live episode.
Oh, that's right. We're doing a live episode. How exciting, people.
Which people may not know, but we're planning to do a live episode.
I didn't know that either. So you might want to give me a date.
As soon as I have a date. But Adam's going to come back.
How exciting. I've never actually been on the show with Adam.
I know. He wants to come back as a regular person.
At the same time.
But I told him that you don't like him. So, not going to do that. All right. So, but yeah, we'll come back to the fantasy ascendant over sci-fi issue. We'll come back to that next month. We'll definitely have a big discussion about that. But we've already sort of like way gone over. So we will have the new question of the week will be up at the end of the week. That'll be on a Friday when this episode goes up, the Friday that follows. So if you have any comments or whatever you want to bitch at us, or you want to send us your scores for the movies we talked about, and whether you're going to see them
after watching them or before watching them,
preferably before watching them, because after watching them you'll probably be suggesting us to review them,
We
won't like you anymore.
Exactly.
So if you'd like to give us a comment or anything like that, you can do that in three different ways. You can send us an email,
skiffyandfanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet,
twitter.com/skiffyandfanty.
Or you can leave a comment on our blog,
skiffyandfanty.wordpress.com.
Yeah, so that's basically our show. It's a little bit longer than usual, but we did skip a week. So
exactly.
We will see you next week with a we're not sure what we're going to be reviewing, but we are doing torture cinema again.
Do we have to?
We could quit.
No, that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
All right, people.
We'll see you next week.
Torture.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. Our new intro music is Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.